There will be an opportunity to submit questions later on in the call. If you require technical assistance at any time, please press star zero on your telephone keypad to be connected with an operator. I will now hand you over to the CEO of Neoen, Xavier Barbaro, to begin today's conference. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good evening, everyone. I'm Xavier Barbaro. I'm the CEO of Neoen. Welcome to our H1 2020 results conference call. I'm together tonight with Louis-Mathieu Perrin, our CFO, and Delphine Deshayes, our IR officer. We will first comment on the key points of our publication, and our comments will be following the slide presentation that you have probably received and which is also accessible through our website. As usual, we will then open the floor to questions, either for Louis-Mathieu or myself. Let's start by our key financial indicators on slide number four. As you can see, strong revenue growth, 33%, all segments and all regions contributed to our revenue growth: Australia, Europe and Africa, Americas. EBITDA is up 58% to 148 million euros. And EBITDA margin is at 94%, up 14 basis points year-on-year. This relates to liquidated damages that partly cover the loss of revenue associated with the delayed commissioning of certain projects, mainly solar projects. And there's also a one-off positive impact in storage in Q1 2020, which is something that we have already commented. The net income is group share is up 32%, which is impressive as well. If we now move on to slide number five, as you can see in H1, there is further progress in the secured portfolio despite COVID environment. If we look into more details, so we have commissioned 239 new megawatts. 143 megawatts of capacity in El Salvador, a solar farm called Capella, which is the largest solar farm in the country, and 81 megawatts in Finland, a wind farm called Edet, which supplies all of its electricity to Google's data center in the country. We have also commissioned three new solar farms in France with total capacity of 15 megawatt peak. In H1, we have also launched the construction of more than 500 megawatts. So the largest solar farm in Australia called Western Downs, located in Queensland. In Finland, the largest battery storage unit in the Nordic region, not only for Finland, but also for the whole region, called Ylikala Power Reserve. And in France, Mont-Malon, a new wind farm and two solar power plants. Overall, assets in operation or under construction are now at 3.6 gigawatts versus 3.0 gigawatts at the end of December. Finally, we have also enjoyed a steady growth in our secured portfolio. We have added 216 megawatts of newly awarded projects in H1. It has happened in France, in Australia and in Finland. This includes solar, wind and storage projects, so genuine diversification. 108 megawatts of merchant capacity for the Western Downs solar project on top of the 352 megawatt PPA power purchase agreement that we had signed with CleanCo, which is a governmental counterparty. 66 megawatt peaks of solar projects in France won last April in the last governmental tender called Creux 4.7. And also a 12 megawatt wind farm in France, and as I said, a new battery in Finland, 30 megawatts, for which the construction has already started, which is why it was already mentioned in the previous segment called Ylikala. So in total, a secured portfolio adding assets in operation, assets under construction, and projects that have been secured but that are not under construction yet, at 4.4 gigawatts at the end of June, which is a substantial increase. If we now move to slide number seven for a more detailed financial review, starting with revenue and leaving the floor to Louis-Mathieu.
Thank you very much, Xavier. So, as announced last July, we achieved 157 million euro in revenue in H1, which is up 33% compared to the previous period. This increase was largely driven by the commissioning of new assets in 2019, but also in H1 2020. It was also boosted by early generation revenue, which we recorded at Capella and EDF, which both sold electricity on the market in Q1 before the start of their PPA in Q2, but also at Eliano in Mexico, which is due to be commissioned in Q4 of this year. On the other end, we experienced a lower average selling price on a wind farm in Australia, namely Onslow 3, as a result of the transition from short-term energy sales to a PPA, which has started in October 2019. The volume effect was overall negative in H1. We had very good wind conditions in Europe in Q1, but at the same time, it was more than offset by lower irradiation in Australia and lower availability of Australian solar and wind assets. In addition, we benefited from a strong increase in storage revenue in Australia, which already highlighted in July. This one-off effect was due to specific conditions which occurred when South Australia was islanded from the rest of the Australian grid after a tornado. And finally, we had a pretty limited negative Forex impact. At constant FX rates, revenue was up 35%. If we now move to slide eight and review the dynamic growth for EBITDA, it was up 58% year-on-year at 148 million euro. This sharp increase was mainly driven by growth in solar in Americas, in wind in the Europe-Africa region, and also in storage in Australia. The EBITDA margin stood at 94% compared to 80% in H1 2019, as it was positively affected by LDs associated with delayed commissioning of certain assets. As you all know, these LDs, which partly offset revenue losses, are recognized as other non-current income in our P&L, thereby automatically improving the EBITDA margin. And the EBITDA margin also benefited over the same period from the one-off positive impact in storage, namely in Q1 2020. If we now look at the breakdown of our EBITDA by segment, starting with the solar business, EBITDA was up 75% at 88 million euros. This reflects a couple of effects. So first of all, we had numerous assets commissioned in our three regions in 2019, but also in El Salvador and in France in H1 2020. We also benefited from the early generation revenue recorded by Eliano in Mexico in H1, and we also had the recognition of liquidated damages, essentially in Americas. As a slightly offsetting factor, which we already mentioned, we had the lower irradiation condition in Australia, the lower availability of an Australian asset in Q2 due to upgrade works on the grid, and less favorable resources overall in Europe-Africa. If we exclude the impact of compensation for revenue losses, the EBITDA margin stood at 86%, which is in line with what we observed in H1 2019. If we now move to the wind EBITDA, we had an increase of roughly 6%. It was driven predominantly by the growth in Europe-Africa, which was a combination on the one end of the contribution of new assets added in 2019 from the commissioning of EDF in Finland in H1 2020, and on the other end of excellent wind resources in Europe in Q1. But as already mentioned, it was negatively impacted during the entire H1 by the transition from early generation revenue to PPA for Onslow 3, and in Q2 specifically by lower availability of our Australian assets due to a temporary regulatory curtailment of production. On top of it, we also suffered from higher network services costs at certain wind farms in South Australia in Q1 2020, which was due to the specific market condition, which were positive for storage. The EBITDA margin declined to 78% from 83% in H1 2019 as a consequence of all these factors. And finally, on storage, EBITDA more than tripled year-on-year, which is a direct consequence of the strong one-off positive impact which we experienced in Q1 in Australia. If we now move to the rest of our P&L on slide number 10, current operating income was up 65%, which is a direct consequence of the strong increase in EBITDA. Net financial expenses increased strongly, which is a consequence of a higher cost of debt related to the commissioning of the new assets, but also the interest expense coming from the issue of a convertible bond in October 2019. The effective interest rates of the debt component of this convertible bond, which is treated as a combined instrument, stands at 4.27% for a cash coupon of 1.875%. So there is a bit of a discrepancy between the two, and the expense in the P&L is higher than the cash expense in the cash flow. We also have a one-time negative impact coming from the renegotiation of the Arndale wind farm financing, which we did in Australia in H1 2020, compared to the positive impact of the refinancing of a portfolio of solar Australian assets in H1 2019. It clearly explains the difference between first half 2020 and first half of 2019. And in addition, we also recorded foreign exchange losses in H1, mainly reflecting the decreasing value of current assets in Mexico and Argentina compared to a foreign exchange gain recording in H1 2019, essentially on the Australian dollar. The effective tax rate stands at 47% compared to 53% in full year 2019. I will come back to this shortly. And net income group share moved up more than 30%, and the increase in operating income largely offsets higher net financial result and income tax. If we now focus on our tax rate on slide 11, so as I said, we had a slight decrease compared to full year 2019. Still, it sets at 47%. The difference between the nominal tax rate and the effective tax rate over the period is mainly due to three factors. So first of all, the withholding taxes. It's lower than last year, but still there is a little impact. Secondly, the non-recognition of deferred tax assets on tax losses carried forward when there is a timely limit in their use over time, essentially in Americas. And lastly, the recognition of deferred tax liabilities on the difference between the tax values and the book values of certain assets. And it's namely associated with Forex impacts in Americas. So as you can see, the tax rates in our P&L include elements of deferred taxation, which are not directly under our control and are not cashed out, which is very important. So our ambition is still to move down gradually our tax rates to a more normalized level by getting rid of tax impacts which are under our control and continue to optimize the use of our tax losses carried forward. So it's work in progress. Looking at the cash flow generation on slide 12, cash generated by the operations amounted to 92 million euros in H1, which is a 10 million euro increase compared to last year. It was driven by the strong increase in EBITDA. As offsetting factors, we had two things. So first of all, a slight deterioration in our working cap, which is due to an increase in receivables, notably VAT receivables associated with assets under construction, which are pending reimbursement, and also a rise in tax paid, which is a consequence of higher results at some subsidiaries and holding levels, in line with the rise of our income before tax. And as a consequence, you pay taxes on the results, but you paid also higher installments, which will be reversed over time. If we look now at our investments, we continue to invest during the period with more than 22 million euros of capex across our three regions. And in the meantime, looking at our financing, we had a net increase of our borrowings of close to 216 million euros, reflecting notably drawdowns on project finance debt, the issue of our green convertible bond, and also the net impact on the refinancing of the Arndale wind farm in Australia. As a result of all this movement, our cash balance increased at 590 million euros. And if we also say a few words of our liquidity position, it is very strong because we benefit from the 200 million euro syndicated loan, which is not drawn down as of today, and also some bilateral lines, which are also undrawn. If we now focus on the gross debt, which stood at 2.7 billion euro at the end of June 2020, so it's roughly a 300 million euro increase compared to year end 2019. The increase in borrowings, which I already briefly highlighted, is essentially due to the combination of the drawdown of debt on new assets under construction, but also the issue of the green convertible bond last June, 170 million euros, out of which 143 million are recognized as debt component, and we also add the refinancing of the Arndale wind farms. We benefited from the decrease in interest rates globally, which led to a decrease in our overall cost of project finance debt, moving down to 3.5% from 3.7% at the end of 2019. And if we look at the overall average group cost of debt, it also benefited from this lower cost of project finance debt and also from the issue of our grant convertible bond at a nominal coupon of 2%. And one last thing to mention, we still have more than 85% of our debt, which is non-recourse. Moving on to slide 14 on our net debt, it went up 200 million euros to 2 billion as a direct consequence of the continued growth in our assets under construction, but still net debt to EBITDA ratio is now at 8 times compared to 8.4 times at the end of December. And we continue to stick to a very strict financial discipline, with project finance debt showing very long tenor, close to 16 years on average, and we continue to maintain balance with a debt denominated in the same currency as our cash flow in order to protect us against any significant change in FX rates. I now hand over to Xavier for the rest of the presentation.
Thank you, Louis-Mathieu. So we are now on slide 16, and we can go through this slide that we update frequently. We have here, as you can see, 3.6 gigawatts of assets in operation or under construction at the end of June. That's a 20% increase compared to the 3.0 gigawatts at the end of December. So our portfolio of assets is materializing. If we add to that 0.8 gigawatts of awarded project, the total secured portfolios of assets in operation, under construction, and awarded reached 4.4 gigawatts at the end of June. Overall, if we include the advanced pipelines and the tender-ready project, the total portfolio stands at 11.2 gigawatts at the end of June. Of course, not all of those projects will materialize, but that gives you an indication of the size and variety of the portfolio that we have, which is again the next wave of projects that will reach the awarded stage. We are, as a consequence, quite comfortable about the 5 gigawatts of assets under construction or in operation at the end of 2021, which is the guideline that we gave at the time of the IPO and that we have constantly reiterated. On slide 17, we can give you the latest status on the 1.5 gigawatt of assets under construction at the end of June. This is, of course, an update of the slide that we gave last July, and it shows the best estimate to date. Of course, this can change. This has changed in the past, given the uncertainties related to the impact of COVID-19. If we go on this slide, on this map, through our main projects. First, starting with Mexico, El Llano, a solar farm. We keep on injecting power into the grid. We are getting revenue from that solar farm. However, from an administrative and a regulatory standpoint, the COD has yet to be reached. So it is now expected in Q4 2020. While this delay is not only a consequence of the COVID-19 pandemic that led to longer administrative processes, but it's also linked to the political environment in Mexico, which is a matter on which we have already communicated. There are some debates in Mexico about what the breakdown should be in the energy mix between fossil fuels and renewable energy, and also the market shares between foreign companies and former utilities, former monopolies in Mexico. And many projects in Mexico, not only belonging to Neoen but also to others, are waiting for this COD stage. And again, at the same time, we inject electricity, we bill electricity, and we do get tangible revenue from that solar farm. Now moving to Argentina, we have a 208 megawatt solar farm under construction called Altiplano. Construction is moving forward. It's of course, complex given the situation for COVID-19 in Argentina. We continue to expect COD in the coming months at the end of Q4. The main issue is with the connection itself. The plant is almost fully built. Now it's about the connection to be finished, but we are moving forward. In Australia, still looking at the southern hemisphere, Bulgana wind and storage project. So delays related to the connection of that plant have already been mentioned in the past, especially last February. At the end of last May, we have reached a key intermediate milestone with the registration of the first 100 megawatts. It does not mean that we are at 100 megawatts, but we are in a ramp-up mode towards 100 megawatts. At the end of September, to give you a more recent update, we had 75 megawatts actually injecting electricity into the grid, compared to 30 megawatts at the end of July, so the ramp-up is actually happening. And we are the next target that we are moving towards is 100 megawatts. More should come, of course, more megawatts should come in the coming weeks and months. The one thing to have in mind is that when we have half capacity, so 100 megawatts, we actually inject more than half of the output. So typically roughly 70% of the expected production. We expect a green light from the regulator, from the Australian regulator in Q4 for the full 214 megawatts, and full COD should be reached in Q4 or in Q1 2021. We have recognized in our account some liquidated damages to compensate for the loss of the revenue. That's part of the contract that we have with Siemens Gamesa. But the contractual cap of liquidated damages has now been reached, and this explains why the level of LDs is going to slow down over the full year. Staying in Australia, as already said, we have recently launched the construction of Western Downs, which is the largest solar farm in the country, and it's also our largest project under construction. COD is expected in 2022, and this solar farm is located in Queensland. And that's a new addition to this map compared to last time. In Australia, again, HPRX, which is the extension of Hornsdale Power Reserve, which used to be the largest battery in the world and which is still the largest battery in the Southern Hemisphere, this extension has been commissioned in September, a few weeks later than expected. Moving back to the Northern Hemisphere, but staying with storage, the Ylikala battery project in Finland is under construction and commission is expected in Q1 2021. A few more projects, so Metoro, a solar project in Mozambique. There was a pause for the construction of that project due to COVID, but construction has resumed and COD is expected in H1 2021. Finally, in France, 63 megawatts of solar capacity and 29 megawatts of wind capacity under construction. Again, some delays in Q2 due to COVID, but construction has resumed and those projects are moving forward. I'd like to say a few words before moving to our guidance on Ireland. So on slide 18, I think it's an interesting case. So we have won this summer in the first governmental tender for solar farms 55 megawatt peaks. This was a joint bid that we submitted with our local partner called B Energy, which is a Dublin-based solar company. We have a little bit more than 50% of this project, so in terms of gross megawatts and net megawatts, there is a discrepancy, but it's still capacity that we consolidate within Neoen. So the formal results have been announced at the beginning of September, and we have won three projects in different parts of the countries. Those plants are scheduled to be commissioned by the second half of 2021. It confirms our position in the solar market globally and our ability to combine reliable technology with competitive pricing, including in countries like Ireland. And of course, it comes on top of what we already have in the country. So we have wind assets in operation that we have acquired in 2019, and we are quite motivated to do more in the country. There will be more tenders coming, and we are currently developing projects, solar projects, wind projects, either in partnership with BNRG or projects that are 100% owned by Neoen, which is the case for the wind assets that we have in the country. If we now focus a little bit on another interesting project on slide 19 in Australia. So in September 2020, this month, we've been awarded a 14-year contract to supply electricity to the ACT, the Australian Capital Territory, with 100 megawatts of wind located in South Australia. So this power purchase agreement came as a result of a governmental renewable auction led by the ACT. So energy will be generated from a project called Goyder Renewable Zone, which belongs to Neoen and which is located in South Australia. It's a large project. It will leverage the region's exceptional wind and solar renewable resources. At the moment, we're just talking about wind, but there will be also a solar part of that project. And it will be the very first tranche, the very first asset to be built in this Goyder zone. Construction is due to start in 2022. On top of that, PPA for 100 megawatts over 14 years, there will be a battery with a 50 megawatt capacity built by Neoen in the very region of Canberra, and in which residents of the ACT and Capital Region will have the opportunity to invest. That was a commitment from Neoen in that tender. There will be no offtake, or there is at least no offtake at the moment coming from the government for that battery. That's a separate asset from the 100 megawatts located in South Australia. But as you know, we have been able to be successful in operating batteries in Australia, not only industrially speaking, but also commercially speaking. Both projects, wind and storage, will help the ACT in strengthening its global leadership position within Australia. And by that I mean the 100% renewable energy target that this territory has, and to reach net zero emissions by 2045, which is a very important and ambitious target, and we are extremely proud to be part of that effort led by the ACT. If we now move to slide 20 and talk about our guidance. So we are tightening our EBITDA guidance to between 270 and 285 million euros. So it's within our range of 270 to 300 million euros that was given in March 2020. It's still at constant exchange rates compared to 2019. This adjustment to our guidance is due to some delays in the commissioning of certain projects, and also to unfavorable irradiation conditions observed in Australia and lower wind resources that we have observed in Europe, both in Q3. So we are giving you this updated guidance, again, within the initial range that was communicated, and we go for the lower half of that range. It's based on, of course, our current best estimate for the timetable of commissioning of our assets under construction that we reviewed earlier in this presentation. Current level of electricity prices, of course, it has been impacted by COVID-19, and it's reflected in those assumptions. And we also rely on the assumption of a normal level of production and invoices at El Llano, the solar farm that we are building and operating in Mexico. If we look at the EBITDA margin, so taking into account the margin already achieved in H1, we expect for the whole year the EBITDA to be above 85%. It's a bit more than what we will have in the long run. It reflects the importance of liquidated damages this year, but as we have reached, or if we are, as we are close to reach the contractual cap for those liquidated damages, we expect a lower contribution from indemnities in H2 compared to H1, and thus a lower EBITDA margin in H2 than in H1, leading to something above 85%, but not above 90%, and still again above the long-term typical EBITDA margin that we see at 80-something%. As you can see on slide number 21, we also confirm our targets for 2021 and 2022. So we continue to expect more than 5 gigawatts of capacity in operation or under construction by the end of 2021. We are well on track for that. We expect those 5 gigawatts to be fully in operation by the end of 2022. And we continue to expect our EBITDA to exceed 400 million euros at constant exchange rates in 2022. These targets, of course, take into account, again, our current best estimate of the timetable for the completion of our project. Thank you very much for your attention. This is the end of our opening remarks, and we are now ready to take questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question over the phone, you can press star 1 on your telephone keypad at any time to enter the question queue. Again, that is star 1 on your telephone keypad. Please ensure your phone is unmuted locally so that I may announce your name and advise when to ask your question. And one more time, it is star 1. We do have our first caller. The first question will come from Nash Swee, calling from Barclays. Nash, when you are ready, your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Hey, good evening, everyone. It's Nash Swee from Barclays. Congratulations for the results. Two questions from me, if I may. So my first question is, given the issues you mentioned in Mexico, do you think you guys might avoid further investment in that market? And my second question is, just wonder if you could give us an update on this $3 billion investment application you guys made in Australia. I appreciate it's still early stage. Just wonder if there's any progress being made and wonder if the 14-year ACT contract is actually linked or contingent on the application approval. Thank you.
Thanks very much for that question. So in Mexico, to give you a little bit of background, so we have been in Mexico since 2014. We have a team there. We have developed projects, I think a very high quality project. We do see a future for ourselves in Mexico beyond those first 375 megawatts. As you can imagine, the focus of the team in Mexico and obviously in Paris as well is to reach COD for that first tranche. We do keep some of our bandwidth for the rest of the portfolio of projects that we have, but we are not at the moment launching any new investment in the country. It may happen in the coming months, but that's something that has not been decided yet, again because our attention is given to the first project, and also because we want a bit more visibility on the on how the energy policy will evolve in Mexico. Having said that, I would like to restate the fact that renewables and especially solar are extremely competitive in Mexico from an economic perspective. They are also reliable because given the fact that there is a lot of solar irradiation, intermittency is a bit lower than elsewhere. And on top of that, the country has the ability to absorb a fair amount of renewables. It's just the beginning of the story. And it's, in our view, easy to integrate new assets into the Mexican grid. We also believe that on top of being competitive and reliable, renewables can create jobs. So it's interesting and important for the Mexican economy. But of course, that's a message that we are trying to convey. We are not the only ones to say that. And it's still up to the local authorities to do more renewables or not, or to do that later. And again, we are in no hurry to further invest in Mexico, but we have, I think, very high quality projects for the future. One last comment before we talk about Australia is that we do not rely on a specific country or project to materialize our growth prospects. We have a diversified portfolio of projects. We are active in 14 countries. Even if Mexico slows down, or Australia, or Finland, whatever, that's something that we are familiar with. It happens not only in Latin America, but sometimes in Europe or in Australia. And we can pause for some time in a given country and still reach our milestones in terms of growth and financials, given the diversity of projects and countries that we have at Neoen. On your second question on Goyder, maybe Louis Mathieu, you can say a word.
Very quickly on Goyder, it's a pretty large project. It will take time to develop. There are three stages, and what we announced very recently, this wind for the ACT PPA, is really the first stage of the project. So it will take a very long time before the two other steps will materialize. Our intention is really to start by developing stage one, and we move on to the two other steps once we'll be able to secure PPAs. But the priority is really to develop the first stage with this first PPA with the ACT.
It's, as you can imagine, probably the best way to start a large project is to start with a long-term contract with a governmental counterparty. It's a great start for that type of project. If I can give you a comparison, a benchmark, when we started in Australia, it started with what we called Hornsdale 1, which was the first tranche of a large wind project in South Australia, and already with the ACT as a counterparty. Then came Hornsdale 2, then came Hornsdale 3, then came Hornsdale Power Reserve, then came Hornsdale Power Reserve Extension. So you can typically see in our past or in our present what we have done on another renewable zone, and that's something that we could envisage for Goyder. It's a great location with great potential, and we will follow the same approach, which is to gradually develop new tranches in Hornsdale. We started in 2015, and it has taken 5 years to reach HPRX, so the second tranche of the battery. So typically, we've been active every year, and that's something that could be the case as well for Goyder. I don't know if it's going to be every year, but there will be several tranches in our view, and it has great potential.
And the next question will come from Manuel Talomo, calling from Exxon. Manuel, your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hello. Good afternoon, everyone, and thanks for taking my question. I've got a couple of questions. First one is a bit more philosophic. It's, I'd like to ask you about the evolution that you see in two key drivers of the business to better understand what is the evolution in the value creation from the new projects. I would like you to tell us a bit about how you see installation costs, I guess, trending down. And on the other side, what is your view on the most recent auctions about, I wonder whether, there's increasing competition and to what extent this could impact the value creation. So, all in all, I wonder whether you could tell us about the trend that you see in the value creation of the new projects, whether it's better, worse, or similar than in the past. And I've got a second question. It's maybe newer. I'd like you to make us some comment on the hybrid projects, on those projects in which you put together a renewable source plus battery. I wonder whether you could tell us a bit about what could be the installation cost, whether the project returns are better or worse, and also the value creation associated to those projects. A lot of questions. Thank you very much.
Lots of questions indeed, and very interesting ones. So value creation and construction costs. Well, construction costs are still going down for solar. They are going down as well for storage. They are not going down, let's say, in terms of facial value for wind, but we do get better performance, so we get higher turbines and higher output. So in terms of cost per megawatt hour, in terms of LCOE basically, we do get substantial improvements every year in wind as well. It's not just for solar and storage. Of course, those improvements benefit to all players. It's not something that is just locked by Neoen. I think that, let's say, we all have the same views, which is in terms of LCOE, an improvement that is, let's say, between -5% and -10% every year due to CapEx improvement, also due to improvements in terms of financing, which is something for which we see a little bit of a slowdown, let's say, of a plateau. There have been better terms in terms of financing in the last 5 or 10 years. Now it's, I think we are getting to a plateau, and lenders are a bit cautious, and rightfully so. Which leads me to my second point, value creation. Let's say, the beauty of a project is in the eye of the beholder, if I could say. And by that I mean that, of course, we can benefit from the decrease in CapEx, we can benefit from the improvement in financing, we can be very competitive in governmental tenders, and then comes something for which different players have different views, which is what will be the prices of electricity for the merchant part of a project. And merchants can happen after a PPA, alongside a PPA, or instead of a PPA. As you know, at Neoen, we have a clear, strong preference for long-term contracts, more than 10 years. More than 80% of our electrons are sold through long-term contracts. It's important to say that again. We see some of our competitors going for full or partial merchant mode, merchant business plans for their projects. I mean, it's up to everyone's taste, but that's something that we are reasonably cautious about. And to give you one example, in Portugal, at the end of August 2020, we participated in a tender. We didn't win anything, whereas we had won a nice project in 2019. And still, for us, it was okay not to win this time, because we thought that those willing to go for very competitive prices were making assumptions on future prices of electricity that we were not willing to follow. And again, it's up to everyone to have their assumption on future electricity prices. But one thing that differentiates Neoen from its competitors is a very, let's say, conservative approach when it comes to merchants, not only in terms of share of merchant within our revenue, but also assumptions for the future. And maybe we are wrong, but at least, let's say, we are conservative, and that's something that is in line with our guidelines. It's still a very, I think, rich period for us in terms of value creation. It happens through other channels, and storage is one of those channels. We've been active in storage in Australia, in France, in Salvador, in Finland. We do combine storage and wind, or storage and solar. We also have standalone storage. We use storage for arbitrage, for frequency control and ancillary services. We also use storage to, let's say, to control or to limit the intermittency of our assets and to be able to provide more sophisticated profiles to our customers. That's something that is not so common yet, but that will be, I think, more and more common for Neoen in the future. And the way we differentiate ourselves is not by taking more risk, which is what some others are doing, and fair enough, nothing wrong about it, but we do try to differentiate ourselves by deepening, by strengthening our expertise in storage and by rolling it out in more and more geographies and more projects.
Thank you.
And the next question will come from Emmanuel Turpin, calling from Societe Generale. Emmanuel, when you are ready, your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Thank you, and good evening, everybody. Three lines of questions, please. One on the results themselves. Would you mind sharing with us the amount of LDs that you booked in your EBITDA in H1, and maybe as a comparison, what it was last year in the first half? Secondly, looking at your capability to build more in the future, we're still focusing on the 5 gigs target, which was first voiced during the IPO. We expect that you will update that number in the future. Until then, would you mind sharing with us what you see on an annual basis as what would be your industrial capability, you know, considering the size of your company and the size of your the staff, the projects you that you have in your development pipeline, and maybe also what would be the next you know, official auctions that you think you will participate into in your different geographies. And the last question would be on the guidance. You made very clear, and this is not new, of course, that your guidance is at constant FX based on the average rates for 2019. Would you mind making it easier for us, or easy for us, and give us your view about what the impact of the lower FX in some geographies, I guess, like LATAM, would have if we assumed that today's exchange rate was to remain where it is for the rest of the year. So that gives us an average FX for 2020 on what would be the impact versus last year's average FX. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Emmanuel. So Louis Mathieu will take question one and three, and I will take question two. Louis Mathieu?
Yeah. To make it very quick and simple, when you look at our P&L, there is a line which is named sorry, I removed my mask. Other operating income, and it's essentially LDs, not entirely, but essentially LDs. In H1, you have roughly 33 million. In H1 2019, we had roughly 6 million. So the difference between the two is essentially additional LDs we booked this year. Your second question was on FX. I think the best way to answer it is to look at what was the impact over H1. Over H1, the difference between EBITDA at constant exchange rate and at current exchange rate was minimal. It was 1.7 million euros, and it was essentially linked to the change in Australian dollar. So I guess with this element and looking at the way the exchange rate evolved since then, I'm pretty sure you could project what would be the impact over the full year. If we were to stay where we are today, so end of September, the impact will probably be in line with what you observe over the first 6 months of the year, but I don't know what will happen in the next 3 months. So if there is more volatility, the impact will increase. But so far, it's roughly in line with what we observe in H1.
That's very clear. Thank you.
Question two. So the question on capacity and annual increases in terms of capacity. Let me first say again that we are comfortable on the 5 gigawatt target for the end of 2021, assets in operation and under construction. And by comfortable, I mean very, very comfortable. We are at the moment at 4.4 gigawatt of assets in operation, under construction, and secured. We have shown in 2019 our ability to bring 1 gigawatt of new projects, almost 1 gigawatt in the basket. That's something that we had already done in 2017. So Neoen can grow. It does not mean that it's the case every year, but we have shown our ability to deliver gigawatt growth in at least two instances. We will give more long-term targets on March 11th, 2021. There will be a capital market day following the full-year results. We were initially thinking of doing that in December, but we want to have a chance to do that in person. We think it's more interactive and interesting, so we have decided to do that in March, early March. And of course, we will go beyond 2021 and 2022. But again, without giving any type of new guidance tonight, I would like to say again, extremely comfortable about the 5 gigawatts in 2021, and pointing at what we have done in 2017 and 2019, which were gigawatt years. And maybe one last comment on this. We have in H1 secured a bit more than 200 megawatt of new projects. It's very comparable to what we had done in 2019. So there is some seasonality in tenders. The fact that we have less than 300 megawatt in the first half does not mean that it will be a disappointing year. It was the case last year, and as you know, it ended up being a very successful year in terms of growth. What I would like to add to this is that growth, of course, is one thing, but the ramp-up of projects when it comes to electrical and financial contribution is another matter. What we have seen in 2020 with the COVID, or what we had seen already in 2019, especially in Australia, with the process of certification for new plants, shows that it's not always easy when you have awarded projects to take them to the next stage, which is under construction, and of course to take them to the eventual stage, which is in operation. So we, I'm happy to say tonight that in terms of growth, I think that Neoen is well on track and hopefully able to sustain that in the long run. And at the same time, I would like to convey another message, which is that we are still very cautious about the ramp-up of projects that have been awarded to us when it comes to bringing them to construction and to operation. I think we have a great team and some specific know-how in terms of how to deliver projects for real and not just have them in our basket of awarded projects. I mean, we have a great track record. Again, 4 gigawatt of projects have materialized or are materializing. And yet, as you remember, Emmanuel, in March 2020, we were one of the very few companies saying at the beginning of the COVID pandemic that it would have a substantial impact, a long-lasting impact. And that's something that we still have in mind. We are very cautious about what the next month is, and in a way, the next couple of years could be. And we are, I think, very successful in terms of growth. And we have seen at Neoen and, of course, at others that delivering those projects in the period that we are going through is not an easy task.
And just another reminder, ladies and gentlemen, to submit a question, you can press star one at any time. The next caller we have is Martin Tessier, calling from Maine First. Martin, when you are ready, your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi, good evening, and thanks for the presentation. Only one question for me. It's regarding the recent news that maybe French government could be interested in a review of the feed-in tariffs in France for PV projects that were commissioned before 2011. Just to be sure that the share of your global portfolio is really would be really low, I tried to look at all your different projects, and fortunately I did not find a lot of them that were commissioned before 2011. So it was just to be sure on this side. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for this question. We have less than 20 megawatts of projects that could be impacted by this potential renegotiation of tariffs. So it's less than 0.5% of our current portfolio of assets and secured projects. So yes, the impact is quite limited. Still, it's bad news. Even if it's less than 20 megawatts, I think we have deserved those tariffs. I mean, those assets were built with high capexes at that time, so I think it's fair that we got at that time high tariffs. But again, the impact would be very limited, even if we would find it unfair. But compared to others in France, Neoen is not at substantial risk. If there were to be a renegotiation of those tariffs, for us it's extremely marginal, again less than 0.5% of what we have in our hands.
Okay, very clear, thank you.
I would like to add something. We have had from the very beginning at Neoen the ambition to be at or as close as possible to grid parity. I mean, we have, as everyone, been willing to have those tariffs, when those subsidized tariffs when possible, but it has never been the core of what we were doing. On the contrary, the ambition was to be as competitive as possible, and hence the very limited part of those assets in our portfolio.
And that is the final question I have, so I will return the call to your host for any closing remarks.
Well, thanks everyone. Thank you for the participation in this call. The next event will be the release of our 9 months' revenues on the 9th of December, November, sorry, after market close. Please note, as I said, that we will have a Capital Market Day on the 11th of March, the same day as our full year 2020 results publication. And of course, fully available in the meantime, Delphine, Louis Mathieu, myself, for any question that you would have. And of course, we will keep you posted about new projects and any significant news regarding Neoen. We are, I think, very transparent about what we do, and that's something that we will keep for the future. Thanks, everyone. Talk to you soon, and hopefully see you soon in person. Bye-bye.
Thank you all for joining today's conference. You may now disconnect your lines.